You are not to discuss this matter amongst yourselves.
We don't submit reports or ask approval for specific operations, if that's what you mean. We are an autonomous department.
Any questions?
Podcasting from an abandoned subspace relay orbiting Risa, this is Section 31, gathering intelligence for you on Star Trek CCG. Now reporting in, operatives Dan and Rogue.
They know all the secrets that you hide.
Welcome to Section, call it 831-1, episode number 290. I'm Dan Hammond.
And I am Rogue Schindler.
This week we have results from our annual Phoenix tournament we did last weekend, and we've been putting off talking about the new Star Wars movie for a couple of weeks, so hopefully everyone who's listening has had a chance to see it, because we're probably going to talk about things that you wouldn't want to know if you haven't seen it yet. But honestly, I can't imagine that's anybody. So do you want to start with the tournament then?
Yeah, why don't we do with that since it's fresh. It's brand new year. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as well, and everyone who, all three of you who are listening right now. we started off 2016 with a triple tournament in San Diego on Saturday. We started at 10 o'clock in the morning and did a second edition Infinite Diversities draft. We had packs that were from the, I guess it was the things that have appeared in on Enterprise. We had Starfleet, Klingon, Romulan, and Nonalign. No, sorry, Ferengi and Nonalign. So Starfleet,
right?
Klingon, Ferengi, and Nonalign. And there were four
and
of
Romulan.
Us. Was it Romulan too?
Yeah, Nonalign does not have headquarters.
Right. Silly me. I
thought there were Nonalines.
Yes, I took apart my deck because I'm entering in the deck builder, and I got a pile for Nonalign here. That's why I'm, of course. So. Klingon, Romulan, Ferengi, and Starfleet. That makes sense, because those were all different affiliations that we saw in the show.
Right.
Let's see. We had about an hour or so of drafting and deck building. We had about, and then three rounds of tournament. Matt ran the event for me and you and JD and Johnny.
Correct. So we had, I mean, we played it like a regular tournament, but it was basically a round robin.
Exactly, yeah. In the first round, boy, who did I play in the first round? Who did you play in the first round? I played you in the last round, so I must
not
have
you.
I must have either played JD
I think it started
or Johnny.
Against JD, yeah.
All right, then I must have started against Johnny. Yes.
That sounds right.
Okay.
Because, no offense, I was like, okay, well, at least I won't have to play Johnny next, because I lost. And I just, you know, not assuming it's about you, I was making assumptions about Johnny, because Johnny always wins.
Yes.
Or frequently wins. But it's a draft, and you know, you never know what's going to happen. Like, you obliterating everyone!
I had a good draft. So we started out with a mission pack, and I got what I thought were great Klingon missions. So I decided that I was going to play Klingon. I think the first mission I got was penetrate enemy lines. It's a good, you know, strength 34, a couple of skills that I knew we had a couple of, three space, and if you have three different species involved, you may draw up to seven cards. So I figured we're playing, you know, this is draft. We're going to have a lot of random non-aligns, some holograms, all kinds of stuff. I figured I'd have a few species, so it might work. That was great. The next pack was... had like a strength, I think it was like that strength-based medical mission. You know, it's medical, bio, exo, and strength. And it's a Klingon planet. I was like, awesome. There was another bio mission that I found. So I'm thinking I'm doing pretty well. I drafted a bunch of Klingons, and then there were a lot more Starfleet going around than I expected. So I didn't think anybody was drafting Starfleet as a primary. So I started drafting a few good Starfleet people. A couple of Makos. Mostly Makos. Daniels was in there. He had some skills that I wanted. I didn't really get a lot of Klingons. I got five Klingons. Wow, I only had five Klingons. Klingons was what I was primary supposed to draft, and I got five. I only have all this information because my deck's like laid out in front of me right here. But there are two cards that were far and away the best cards in the entire tournament, and that was one that everybody had a copy of, which is In Development, which is just a one-turn... just one drop, stop, right?
Oh, yeah.
The other was the same thing for me, Chula the Dice. In this format,
Oh, nice.
Integrity greater than 6, cunning greater than 6, and strength greater than 6. Wow, that's tough. I've got a couple of 6 integrity Klingons, but nothing better than that. I've got Brennan Scott, who's 8-8-8, unless you have any cards in his hand. I've got strength. I could do the strength. Ooh. Hajur has 7-7-8. He was pretty good.
Wow.
So
you got a Hajur?
Yeah, I did. He was pretty good.
Oh my god.
He fit right. I got a Hajur and a Belrid, strength of 7. Durg, strength of 7. I was going for strength and I got a lot of them. So I could have barely passed it with all my best people out and no cards in hand. But it was a one-drop stop for everyone else. I did play Johnny in the first tournament because Johnny did something to me, which I thought was very smart, and I did it to everyone else, you and JD, in the next two rounds, which is you go attempt a mission, and then you attempt it again, and by then, you know, assuming you're attempting with 8-9 people, your opponent will have drawn through their entire dilemma pile, right? We'll say? Most part?
Yeah.
18?
Likely.
You know, with a few extra. So they will have seen the in development and any other really good dilemmas, and they'll get played there to stop you, right? So at this point, the rules of the format are, when you finish a mission, you get to take all those dual dilemmas back to hand. Well, now that you've played your in development and your, you know, jewel of a dice or anything else that's really good, I'm not going back to that mission because those dilemmas are stuck there. I'm going to my other mission that I want to solve, because you only have to solve 2. I'm going to hit that mission until it's all done, and then go back to the first mission, hopefully, you know, with not much in the left to stop me in the dilemmas. That worked really well. I would definitely utilize that strategy again.
Yeah, that was pretty brilliant. Unfortunately, I didn't play you until the last round, and Johnny did not do that against me, so I did not see it until it was way too late for me.
I did play my, the clown go away? So maybe he did it on accident, and I just thought it was a great play, and I don't know. Whatever it was, it was pretty brilliant. Like I said, once you lock down those good dilemmas, you know, there's only going to be so many good dilemmas. It makes sense to just go somewhere else, you know, just sprinkle a few here and there. I think we joked about if I would have tried to do my third mission, you would have had no dilemma pile left.
Yeah, that was really solid. I was, because you attempted one, then you attempted the other, and I was like, are you going for the third? But, I saw all of those really good Starfleet cards go by, and I just, like, every time, I think starting with the first Brennan Scott, I was like, I need to take that. And, you know, it's such a good card, and I don't want to pass it, but I was like, no, I got to stick to my guns. I don't want to end up with a bunch of stuff. And I wish I had shifted gears because there were so many good things floating around that I think people ended up getting them piled up just because they were around.
Yeah.
And there were two things that came up. So the first pack we drafted was missions before we got to the actual draft packs. And two things came up in that I stuck to that I wish I hadn't. Which were, like Johnny mentioned, you know, we have to get to 70 points. So, you know, beware the 30-point missions, you know, don't not take them. But, you know, I was like, oh, that's right, you know, get 35 points. So I just drafted 35-point mission after 35-point mission to make sure I had tons of options. And then we saw, like, what, one Starfleet mission?
The number, that was one of the things that was, when I looked at my first pack, I looked through for affiliation icons, and that was one thing that we all noticed, that there are not a lot of Starfleet missions.
Yeah.
There were a fair number of any can attempt this, but just looking at it straight on and, you know, trying to get a feel for how many options you'd have, there wasn't a lot there. It was, there was a lot of Fed and Klingon is what I saw.
There were a few, and they turned out to be pretty powerful. You know, anyone can attempt this missions, but they weren't what I would call prevalent. They were the exception to the rule. So I kept thinking of that, and I just was like, I mean, I guess you could count on your second affiliation because literally everybody played 2 headquarters, and go where they can attempt and hope that you don't run out of that affiliation. But that just really made me shy away from Starfleet, and you know, it ended up being a mistake. And then You know, after having tons of 35-point missions, I, like, about halfway through, I pulled an Enterprise A, the non-aligned Enterprise A, that scores 5 points if it's staffed at your mission. Mm-hmm. And I got the Romulan. I started drafting Romulan really early because I got a Koval in my first pack, I think. And I was like, ah, oh, this guy's awesome. You know, thinking in my brain that you're like, oh yeah, when people are using multiple headquarters, he's awesome. So everybody's going to have, you know, lots of people are going to have multiple headquarters. He's going to be great. Yeah. Not so good. Because your opponent has to have more headquarters than you.
Right. And if everyone's playing two, that is not so likely.
So that didn't really help. I got two of the Stooges that unstop if you discard an event, but that meant I stocked events that I didn't really need, hoping I could use them to unstop. And so I my deck was just really not good. And I think that coupled with the fact that I haven't played 2E in a while, and it is actually a very different animal. The ID draft, like you said, you know, you have about 18 to 20 dilemmas, and so you were smart right away. Everybody has the one powerful dilemma, and you know, you get that out of the way, and you know, if you don't get it back, that's a big tool lost. And I mean, I remember, I think all my games went to time. I managed to hold my opponents to timed wins at least in the first two rounds, but I just like kept looking over, and your table was sitting around and joking and eating, and I'm like, there's 20 minutes left in this round. Like, what is going on over there?
I think my game with Johnny, I won. I think I had the win wrapped up when time was called, and I got a full win on my turn. And the game against JD went a little quicker. I mean, you know, I'm looking at these cards, and I got a Warrior's Birthright to go with the Klingon stuff. That worked well. I got two copies of We Are Klingon, so I add, you know, strength plus one. It was okay. I had a copy of The Promise, which I tried to cheat with early until Johnny pointed out that it says you have to actually have a Klingon in your discard pile. And as I said, I only had 5 Klingons. I'm looking, I had 7 Starfleet. I was primarily trying to get Klingons. I had 7 Starfleet, and I've got 8 non-aligns here. Anyway.
You know why?
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Because JD,
I know why.
Drafted them all.
Yeah. So
and
I'm,
then didn't use them.
Yeah. So after our game's over, I said, yeah, I got all these cards I didn't use. I got... was a Chancellor Gorkon and what? Because there was a
Gowron.
Yeah, a Gowron. There was a Breen going around that says you have to have a cost 4 personnel to play him.
Yeah,
like, I didn't even
which
see.
I drafted without reading.
I didn't even see a cost 4 personnel. Well,
nope.
All right. So back to the biggest mistake I made at the very beginning. I mentioned that I drafted a couple of dilemmas or missions that required biology. All these personnel, not a single biology. I don't think I saw biology go by. Anyway, so I had to swap in some missions that I didn't want to do, including one that actually worked out well, which was this Liberate Photonic Servants. I did that every time. It's only strength.
That was impressive.
Strength 35 and a bunch of skills that are pretty much not hard to get. And since I had all the holograms, since I was using the Alara and all the hologram stuff, I got to download whatever hologram I didn't have out. That was kind of cool.
Very cool.
Yeah. I saw you were playing with the vascular pad, so you must have got the other one that was going around.
I did. That was
nice.
That was money. That was the only reason I had a chance against Johnny.
Between that and the hypo spray to keep my, you know, the one skill that I needed, you know, like that little, I would think I was low on treachery. Keeping that guy alive with, even if it stops the whole attempt, just keep the guy alive because I didn't want to wait till drawing up again. Yeah.
Oh, did JD play his whole card against you?
Because
he snuck by a win against me because we both had one mission at time. I had 35 points and he had 30, but he dropped that. I don't even remember the name of it, but it's the Ferengi event. Lose 10 points to score 20 points.
You know, I saw he was doing multiple 30-point missions. And he was running around like he was going to solve all 3 of them. And I figured he must have had one, but I never saw it. That's hilarious.
Yep. That was his rounding the corner card.
That's perfect.
Yeah, I was just... I was so excited about the Enterprise, because I was like, oh man, I can do 30-point missions, and then I can run. And in the format, you can spend the three counters to get a ship right away. So I knew I would always have that ship.
Nice.
Which is huge. And I went and I looked, and it's like, you have to have that ship staffed to score the points. And it's two big stars and a little star. And I had four big stars in my whole deck.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I can't plan my whole strategy around this if I don't know I can have it staffed, you know, when I need the points.
That's tough. I've got two big stars in my whole deck. Wow. Yeah. Staffing would have been bad if I had a.
Yeah.
Well, our game lasted 20 minutes. Everything fell my way. I've got to say, in my game against Johnny, any time I drew into dilemmas, I drew exactly what I needed, and all the chances I took always worked. That is how I won the game. Wow. All my chances worked. And when he played dilemmas against me, it would be like, okay, stop somebody with Exo or this. All right, I don't have any of that. I guess nothing happens then. Okay, I'll keep going. at one point, he attempted with like seven people, and I needed to stop two. And there were four under already, so I draw three, and then I can't play this one. But this is a two-coster, and that's a one-coster, so I'll play them both, and I'll stop you again. It's like everything was falling my way. It was amazing. So I did well. I won the tournament. I went undefeated. That was fun.
Yeah. But it was interesting to do the draft. It was fun. I'm glad we did it. I was also interested to note everybody played two headquarters. All four headquarters were represented twice, and no two people had the same two headquarters.
That was an interesting spread that I don't think we could have done if we tried. You know what I mean?
No, not even close. So I had Klingon Romulan. You had Klingon Starfleet. JD had Romulan
Ferengi,
and Johnny had Ferengi Starfleet.
Awesome.
Astounding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a good format. I would definitely play it again. Like I said, I think we talked about trying to add something into the mission pack algorithm so that it matches. There's an equal number of affiliation icons on missions, so it's represented a little bit more evenly. But even so.
Or at least make them attemptable, you know, so there are at least a certain percentage of, you know, even if they don't have Starfleet icon, they at least are attempt by any mission, you know, attempt by anyone or attempt by any non-board.
Yeah. And thanks again to Matt for running everything while we had a good time playing. That was it was above and beyond. He came out and ran that and then disappeared for the 1E2. So we moved on from drafting second edition to drafting first edition. There was some talk about Rutz running it sealed, but Thomas joined us and Charlie joined us. So we had up to six players, and Thomas said, oh, I didn't have a chance to draft earlier. So we all drafted mirror packs, right?
Yes, we had six mirror packs each, and it was really funny because we were all holding them and they were bowed and they were so old they had really started to curl. But I'm really glad we drafted that. I think having played that before, just watching them go around, it was like half the packs were, you know, each pack was like half useless people like Romulans and you know, non-mirror people, and then you'd get a couple Terran Empire or a couple KCA. I think it would made it. I think it made all the decks a lot more playable to have the draft go around, and you could get one or the other.
Certainly, it meant that. I mean, even if it were 50-50 split KCA or Terran Empire, it meant that you could pull what you wanted instead of just, as you said, have a half a pack of I don't want to say dumb blank cards for you, right? So
yeah. Now it was too bad that it didn't work out, because it would have been hilarious. But Charlie, apparently noting the prominent presence of, because this was the follow up, this was the next set after Trouble with Tribbles, and so since they only had a few TOS Klingons and Feds there, they had a bunch of TOS Romulans in this set as sort of a supplement to that.
Right.
And he had apparently started drafting them with the intent of playing Romulan from the Alpha Quadrant.
That would have been amazing had he been able to pull it off.
Yeah, just hilarious, except that there is no facility in that set that would allow him to play in the Alpha Quadrant. So he just, like, he couldn't. He eventually had to pull, you know, one of the mirror affiliations. But that was a hilarious idea, and I think would have been fun. Now, the thing that actually was a wild card that none of us knew about until he sprung it on us was we each picked a mirror starter, and we drafted, and some of us chose right away when we were drafting what we were going to play, and some of us waited until the very end.
Some of us kind of drafted some good cards. Some of us drafted some bad cards.
But we got cards, and we were ready to make our decks, and then Charlie says, wait, I have one more thing as a holiday gift for everyone. We're not going to draft these. You just take these, and you can put whatever you want from them in your deck. And he gave us all a pack of reflections.
Yes. Awesome. Yes, that was
which was like the biggest rando wild card.
Yeah,
you could throw in like JD had a Klim Dukachin, which was supremely annoying. He said he had a couple of other funny wild cards from that too. Charlie was running around with a Data's Head. Which it sounded like he got in every game, because I know he got it against me, and he got, I heard it out against Johnny saying, okay, well, Data's Head has cunning of 10 and then computer skill. And then these guys, it even saved him when we were fighting, because he had, it gives your ship plus 2 attributes.
Yeah. That's fine.
And so he was able to damage me when we were just, completely random. I got a Miles O'Brien founder foil, which I was waiting to play against a Terran Empire player so I could have him infiltrate and then hit that infiltrator dilemma, but that never quite worked out. But he was a skill tank. What did you get something that was key out of your...
In like one of the last packs, there was a Defiant. That was kind of fun. So I pulled the Defiant, and that was when we passed the packs the wrong way. And so Thomas passed me his pack, and then there was a Type 7 or whatever shuttle pod in there. So I'm like, all right, well, maybe I will play Terran Empire. I get this report. I could just drop this with a couple of guys. I mean, that makes things a little faster. That'd be nice. That'd be funny. But it turns out we're passing the packs the wrong way. So it went all the way around the table, and Charlie's to my left. And this is, you know, right toward the end, you know, we're all getting punchy already. And Charlie says, so, you know that Defiant that's in this set? Is it Defiant class? And, you know, I know exactly what he's talking about because he's reading the same shuttle pod. Apparently he was trying to make us all think that he had the Defiant and he was going to be playing it. And he said, well, I guess I'm thinking in my head, don't take it. Well, I guess I'll take it then. And he takes it. Passes the pack to me, and I'm thumbing through there trying to find it, and it's not in there. After all that, it went all the way around, and he took it as a bluff. So I decided to not play my Defiant, just so he couldn't, you know, just for spite.
Drop it.
The two rares I'm looking at that I played with were Mr. Quark and Mr. Sisko, and they were both pretty good. The non-aligned Mr. Sisko was great. His ability never really came into play. I guess it would have. He bumps up Quark plus 1. Your Terran Empire people, because I was playing KCA. But he had a lot of good skills. Someone else mentions Mr. Sisko, and Professor Sisko lets Mr. Sisko play to that location so he can report for free to her at certain points in the game.
Ah, very nice.
I didn't have a Mr. Rom to download after Mr. Quark died, which I think he did in every game. but he had... He got me past him, and Quarkbot got through a lot of dilemmas in both 1E and 2E. Hologram Mr. Quark, and my draft, my reflections card was Galen, who is not the greatest, but has a lot of good skills. Archaeology, computer skill, leadership, navigation, the superfluous music and treachery, but he's a science, and he's got, you know, cunning of 8. That's pretty good. Unfortunately, his TNG logo turns off all the fun stuff that you get from turns off the blue ship in the quadrant.
Oh, no.
It never came up. He always came up so late in the game that it didn't matter, but he was the only reason I had a temporal mic wormhole in the deck, so I can play him. I don't think I had any AU cards at all. I didn't have any AU dilemmas. But it turns out I drafted the minimal amount of dilemmas required to go with, you know, I think I had 9 seed cards plus 21 dilemmas, so it wouldn't matter.
Wow.
If I didn't have it anyway. I got 3 dilemmas that were pretty good. I drafted Jewel of the Game early, thinking in Constructor that's such a good card, and then repeatedly drafted over and over again people who get past Jewel of the Game, just because for some reason there's so many in the set that have greed and high cunning. There's just a lot of that. I thought Distraction would be better, but I think 2 of the 3 times people ran into it, there was either all males or all females, and it's just discarded. Nothing happens. Emergency Conversion was good. That stopped Johnny from stealing one of my missions to Astro Transporter Skill.
So, that's a good one.
But all in all, no superstars or anything. What did you draft?
Well, that's funny you should ask.
Let me see if I can remember any of them, because on the first turn, I think you dropped the Intendant, and I remember saying to myself, "Wow, that's such a good card to pull because so many people reference the Intendant, so you can play your guys for free. So that's awesome." And then it just got worse from there.
Well, to be fair, the Regent Worf and Security Chief Garrick that I subsequently played on the second turn, getting all 3 of the leaders out right away, those are both in the starter.
Yeah, you know what's not in the starter? The Horda that I ran into on my turn when I tried to go get my card draws. Nor was the other Horda that was in the other mission that I never actually saw, because all my people died to the Horda.
Which I helpfully reminded you when you wanted to stop. It's like, oh, don't you want to go to the next dilemma so you can see what it is? You're not stopped yet.
Yeah, thanks.
Well, that's kind of how it's designed. I wanted to make sure you guys could stay down there. Yeah, well, you know, as I kept saying every time somebody hit the second one or saw the second one, what was I going to do? Pass it?
Certainly not. No.
Because I didn't take any of the Doctrine Not a Bricklayers that I saw going around, and I knew Thomas would have them all.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can download a geology personnel pretty much, so that's pretty good to have.
But I got 2 agony booths, which were amazing. I learned that in the false start version of this draft that we played before. It's just so good. Drop a booth and go start attacking people. Charlie had he got the headquarters for the Terran Empire.
Oh, nice.
Which was great, except that then he was hanging out there. He's like, oh, yeah, I'll beam down and I'll, leave my ship, and then it's over to you. I'm like, okay, well, there's an empty ship in orbit. I'll go get some free card draws. So, I could get going pretty early, and then I could break my engine, break the new arrivals for an extra card play if I really needed to without worrying about losing card draws. That Agonizing Booth is so good, and an Agonizer. Was a lot of agony to get the buff. If case my Vorchas were not enough to keep my battle in line, I got a Regency 1. And so, I could, drop that on your face if all else fails. And a Stolen Cloaking Device to download out of my Q's tent, which I pulled from the Reflections pack. And then I could cross that over to play them in the Alpha Quadrant at my neutral outpost if need be, which was also very handy. So, good draft for me.
And a Tantalus Field.
General.
Don't forget about Tantalus
Field. Oh, yes, and the Tantalus Field, which I was really weird having to earn.
Oh, yeah, must be have
Having played the Starship ISS Enterprise and downloading it so often, but I pretty much every game put that under the... Because the big flaw with this draft was missions. There are almost no missions, and so both starters have 2 stealable missions, a forward pointer and a universal. I managed to get 1 mission I could do. I think there's 2 in the set. There's the Feldamite Rush and the Mine Dilithium. in the Gamma Quadrant, which I try, or in the Delta Mirror Quadrant, which I tried to grab, and I just each time, the two times I saw one, there was something better I had to take. But I'm glad I managed to get the one card so I could swap at least one of those stealable missions out, because both of my early games first two games hinged on stealing that universal mission right away. Because I knew the combo that was there, I knew that it would stop you, and I knew I could get past it if I had the right people. So I was able to go over there, plow through that, get a mission right away, get the Tantalus field, take out your key personnel, and then head over to a space mission that was inevitably double seated. And then against you, we had the mirror match. So that one mission was literally the only non-stealable mission in the game. All of yours were stealable. I had one mission that I could go do. And so between getting literally the best draw I could possibly get, you and I played in the third round. We were both undefeated. So it was good. You know, we had performed well, but that I just, all right, here are the three big KCA leaders ready to go. And I can play pretty much anything for free and run out there. Like you were saying, what was it? You're like, I felt bad about blowing somebody's ship up earlier, but I see now that it's
well. I started off against Thomas, and we were also, it was a mirror. I think I played three KCA opponents all day. There was threat of battle, but I don't remember if we actually had any combat at all. As you said, all of my missions, since I had three KCA opponents, all of my missions were stealable in all three of my games. So, we both had that universal mission, and in my game against Thomas, he solved mine, and then I ran over and solved his. Because we each knew, you know, I think I peppered everything with dilemmas everywhere, but, you know, for some reason, I think in that game, it was the biggest baseline I had the entire day, because Thomas drafted all kinds of missions. I think he changed out at least four of the six missions. I'm surprised he was running the universal one. I think we only had. I think that was our. I think we only had one duplicated mission. Because he had changed out so many, and then there was the universal missions that were stealable, and then it was my 40-point mission. So, it seemed, yeah, all day long, people were attempting my missions. Anyway, I managed to pull it out against Thomas in like the last turn with a support personnel download. But against Johnny, again, he could do any of my missions, and I could do, I think, four of the six of his, maybe five. At one point, he went to the Alpha Quadrant. I went to the Alpha Quadrant to attempt a mission. Got stopped. I could see him doing some machinations in his head. Well, if I come over here, he might be able to shoot me. I might get damaged. I can rebuild. He went through the wormhole, attempted the mission, and got stopped. And then I was able to... I had what's the transporter device? Multidimensional transporter device?
Oh, nice.
It was kind of nice. I think I only used it maybe in his game, but I was able to play a few people to... I couldn't move both ships through the wormhole, but I could play some people to the mirror quadrant, move the ship over to the wormhole, beam people back and forth, some science and engineer back and forth, bring the other ship in, move it over, and then blow him up. Johnny was very disappointed in my actions. I don't think he appreciated that very much. He said something to the effect of, I understand why you did that instead of, you know, going to try to actually attempt missions and solve. Well, you know, solving missions is a lot easier if you don't have any opponent on the board. And I had zero confidence in getting through my own dilemmas, much less his, so that was the right play at the time.
I definitely agree with that. I mean, this... Yeah. With the dilemmas that we're playing with at missions that are double up, you know, and, you know, you could start or stop, and, you know, if you get stopped, then he could come in and steal. Yeah. If you have the opportunity to take out his ship, that's absolutely 100% the right play, because it's much better to try and get through those doubled up missions while you don't have somebody sitting there waiting to steal it back.
Yeah, and for the most part, I only went out if I had both of my Klingon Vorchas, you know, staffed. Or I had a Bajoran ship that could land, so I was kind of safe from battle every once in a while. But like I said, in my game against you, my guys were getting picked off by the Horda, and I was running around just trying to do anything. And then when you played Regency One, I was just ready to be done. But yeah, so I blew up Johnny, you blew up me. And, you know, that's the way things work. So we were both undefeated in the last round. So you ended up you had two timed wins in this game, or was that the 1E or 2E?
Well, I had timed losses in 2E. I think I had a full win against JD, but a timed win against Charlie. I can't quite remember now.
Well, in the end, you got a full win rather quickly. It was probably another 25-minute game or so, if that, right?
I don't know. It went a bit longer. I think it was more like 40, 45.
I just remember all my cards being in my discard pile at the end.
Yeah, when you split up your ships, I was like, well...
Well, I split up my ships because you had the Tantalus field, and I put... So I put all my universal guys on one ship and sent them through the wormhole, and then I put all my unique guys on the other ship, and I left them on that side, and then I beamed back and forth so you didn't know where everything was. So I figured maybe I can keep somebody alive if you guess wrong. If you picked a ship and said, okay, I'll kill a unique guy, you discarded three cards for nothing.
Sure.
Now, and then you just blew up the whole ship, and that was the end. So whatever.
Yeah, I could go either way with that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, congratulations on going undefeated in your tournament.
Thank you very much. It was a good day for Section 31.
Yes, it was.
Until Tribbles.
I no, it was fun. It was a fun format. I think with a bigger mission spread, I think it would have been a whole lot of fun. Would you agree?
I agree. I think a little bit more in the missions pack, and maybe like an alpha, just throw in a neutral outpost for everyone in case you want to do that. That Romulan thing, or have a base in the, because it's so hard to go back and forth. I think it might be nice for everybody to have that. I'm about to lose power for some reason. I will be back in like 45 seconds.
Okay. Well, then at this point, since the theme of the Phoenix tournament is there are prizes for each tournament, but there is also a grand prize, or prizes in this case, for whoever does well over the course of the entire day. So we had our second edition tournament that I won, and then the second edition tournament. I'll have to look at the scoring. If it comes, I don't know which is first in first edition. If it's head to head or differential. If it's differential, Johnny came in second. If it's head to head, I came in second, I think. So I had a pretty good lead going into the finals for overall Phoenix points. So according to my Charlie's calculations, because he kind of made some announcements before, I had not let Johnny win by more than two places in the Tribbles, and I think Rogue had to come in first, and I had to come in last, for me to win, for Johnny to win, or you to win, or me to win. Does that sound right?
That sounds correct. I remember thinking, as we went into the last round, that it was impossible for me to win because there was no way I could win, and you get last place. There was just like you were in like second or third, and there was just no way. Everybody would pass you,
right?
And I could get enough to go out. So I was like, "All right, well, that's a little relaxing."
Well, I'll tell you what. I'll tell you a secret. In our 2E game, before we played, before you sat down, I sidled over to Matt, who was running things. I said, "Okay, I think I looked at the scores. I don't think I can lose the tournament. I'm going to have a much better game if I'm not stressed out. Could you confirm that for me?" And he said, yeah, you've won the tournament. I said, okay, then I'm going to have fun.
Oh, for 2E?
Yeah, for our 2E game, because I'm paranoid as all get out. But so.
Oh, sure. I know the feeling.
Going into the Tribbles, at least I had a goal. And I figured with this deck, I was playing a new deck. It had a couple of Fizbins in it and a lot of Time Warps. I figured I could go out at least once. And that was the goal. You know, not come in last, middle of the pack, and I'm good. Right? If I win, great. But middle of the pack is what I was going for. Middle of the pack or higher. And I want to say I went out twice. Once for very little points, but the second time to finish the round was just enough to... We were joking about that 7,000 points that I could have gotten, you know, if one step closer. I think Johnny beat me by like 10,000 points to take second place or third. But it was fairly close. I don't think it was... Was it 500,000? Was that the big total?
Or no, six. Thomas had six at one point.
Yeah, so it wasn't a huge scoring game. It was, you know, anyone Anyone could take it at any time. No one. So has JD been playing his anti deck like the last couple of tournaments? Is that why? Because he seemed to imply that it was no fun because someone else was playing Kapla, and I had thrown a couple Kaplas in just because.
I was soured on the anti deck at Gen Con, mm-hmm. as we all know. But his has not been as bad. His has been a lot more what it was intended to be. You know, just kind of fun, throw in, goof around with. But I was just, you know, like, oh god, here we go again. But it was much more entertaining. You had Kaplas. Thomas had Kaplas. I was very disappointed that I didn't get to copy a Kapla to get the ante.
No, it's funny.
Otherwise, I would have copied something else. But it was definitely more interesting and more interactive if you got to play.
Yeah. It was, like I said, it was pretty close all the way through. And I think it went Thomas, Johnny, me, and then Matt, and then you. Does that sound right?
I just know I was last. By the end of that, I was just I was not really having a good time, and it was not anybody's fault. I was mulling it in the way because I knew we were going to play the Phoenix tournament. I was like, oh, I'm going to play my rescue deck. You know, it's solid deck. It's never underperformed in this way. I always go out at least once and get some points. You know, which is fine. That's all. You know, I don't have to win all the time, or even some of the time. I like getting on the board and being competitive. And, you know, and I've had bad days where I've been recycled and I've had to come back. And
did you even get recycled?
I did not get recycled a single time. I had no one to blame, but the bad luck of my deck. It just did not, I didn't get the right numbers at the right time to be able to kick into the cycle. And I got nothing. I didn't even get to copy a utilize to get on the board. It was unfortunate.
All right. Well, at the end, since Johnny did not win by two places, then I was the Phoenix champion, which was awesome because Phoenix King. We've done this. We've done the Phoenix tournament for, I think this was number 13, as the math goes. And I don't think I've ever won before. So usually it's got to be Johnny. I think you won last year. 2 years ago?
Yeah. Did I?
Yeah, because one of our episode titles was Phoenix King. Because you had won both
that's right.
and Tui.
Yeah, so I won when we did it at the big... that was a number of years ago. We had it at the clubhouse, so I guess I've won twice.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was. I had a great time. I was happy I came out, even though I was a little sleep deprived. And you know, it was fun to, I went last, first, last in the tournaments. So I'm impressed and thankful that I placed as highly as I did, in the Phoenix standings. And I got my first choice out of the Phoenix prizes anyway, which is amazing. I don't know where those came from, but they were great prizes.
Yeah. Someone donated a bunch of, like prop pieces, you know, like, insignias. And I got this awesome ring, the Starfleet Academy ring, that was dropped in some drink and blew up Section 31, so I figure I should take this before anybody else does.
Yeah.
Definitely. Apparently, I graduated from the United Federation of Planets Starfleet Academy in 2258.
And I picked up it does not seem to be in reach at the moment, but I got the rank insignia that they have on the original series movies, the cool red uniforms, the best uniforms.
Yeah.
Got the captain's insignia for that, and that's a costume I've always wanted to make, so now I'm on my way.
Nice. Excellent. Yeah, so great prizes. It Tribbles wrapped up, and it was a great day all around. I think we'll do it again next year, that's for certain. Charlie, who ran the thing, has been severely overworked, which is why the results aren't up yet or anything else. But
yes.
So we didn't have much in the way of advertisements and hype and build up. So we didn't get any outside players is what I was going for. Usually we'll get somebody from Santa Barbara or somebody else come down. So we will We will attempt to hype it up a little bit more next year. Maybe we can get some visitors, right?
Yeah, we did get a lot of tweets from some Chamber Arbor guys saying wish we were there, but you know, it's holidays. We didn't really get the chance to hype it up. It kind of snuck up on me. I mean, I knew it was there, but you know, I'm really glad it was draft because I don't know I would have had any decks.
And it was the day after New Year's instead of, you know, a couple of days after on the weekend. So maybe not the best timing. But like I said,
but smart planning on our parts, I guess. Go us. Yeah. when we kind of all talked about it after the last tournament. What are we going to play? How about draft? Okay, good.
Yeah, very good.
So, yeah, good time. Looking forward to next year.
All right, fair enough. So, I guess we're going to transition into a movie that we saw a couple of weeks ago or yesterday. Did you make it up to see it yesterday? That was your plan.
I did. We got up early, even though we didn't want to, and drove up to the Chinese Man Theater in L.A., in Hollywood, because it's amazing. When we got up, I was like, oh, my God, why are we doing this? We could just go to an IMAX here, even though the local IMAXs are not real IMAXs. They're just slightly larger, slightly louder screens
they're IMAX. IMAX.
Yes, LIMAX. That's brilliant. Mm. But oh my God, I've never been in that theater. It's a legendary historic theater, and you know, tons of world premieres have happened there. Caitlin actually got to see it there when we went to the world premiere. They had three. It was showing in three theaters because the premiere was so big, and so the people who were actually in costume were in the Dolby Theater, which was actually kind of Blue Goats. As far as the movie going experience, the other, you know, the getting to see it early and being in a room full of stars who were in it was obviously amazing. But I heard people afterwards, I was like, oh, that was fine. You know, as far as picture quality, like, oh my God, the sound was, I kept hearing popping and you couldn't understand things. It was a terrible picture quality. And I'm like, guys, we just saw Star Wars 4 days early. The Chinese IMAX was spectacular.
Really? Okay. The theater's been there forever.
Yeah, but they've made it. They've maintained it. It's laser, digital projection. It's got all around sound, and it's one of those giant, you know, 1,000 seat theaters. I think probably more than that. It's huge. We were halfway back, and I still felt like I was right here. I was still turning my head to see all the scroll because it was such a big theater,
wow.
And it was really immersive. To see it there and a lot of fun and to see it in 3D. I am actually not a fan of 3D in general. I think whenever they use it now, it's kind of just like, oh, look, we're in 3D. You know, it was really sparingly used. Like it was always there. The crawl was amazing.
Oh, okay. See, I don't know that I've seen more than one movie in 3D, maybe two or three, and they were probably all at Disneyland, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know that I've gone to see a real, quote unquote, real movie, you know, in 3D, but that is the one thing that no one has ever said until just now that makes me want to see it in 3D, and that is the opening crawl. That would be amazing.
It's incredible. I can't recommend seeing this movie enough in 3D. Everybody's going to see this movie more than once. I know, you know, you probably go multiple times in 2D, but everybody should make at least one of their viewings of this in 3D. I don't know if you'll go back.
Wow.
To seeing it in 2D, because I've seen it. This was our seventh time, and it's my third or fourth in 3D because it was amazing. The crawl is great. There's a shot, where they switch back and forth between perspectives and they switch back to first order perspective. And it's the shot of the new Star Destroyer, mm-hmm. kind of from slightly off to front. And it's like, whoosh, you know, the point is like right there in your face. And, you know, the crawl goes by and the Star Destroyer comes in and they have the landing ships coming around and they come right at you. And it's just, you know, there are very few of those spots where it's, you know, gratuitously 3D. It's all just very, it gives, to no pun intended, it gives depth to the world. It is really a great, great viewing.
I imagine the battle over Maz's temple and the battle at the Starkiller base probably show it off a lot. You know, all the ships flying.
Oh yeah, things. Yeah, all the X-wings, with the dogfight, just really great, great showing of a great movie, which we haven't really talked about yet. So this is the part where I'm going to say, if you haven't seen it, you should stop listening. Cause I think, you know, well, okay. You know, if you haven't seen it yet and you're still trying to avoid spoilers, then you're kind of cutting your own legs off, but there's your one warning. What did you think?
I'd say, you know, 9.5 out of 10 Starfleet insignias up. I, you know, there were only a few things that I didn't like, and there were nitpicky things that, you know, that, they were there to tell the story and didn't have to be, you know, I can take off my that's not right science hat for a little while, right?
Yep. Yep, absolutely.
Yeah.
I even as we were talking about it, we're like, I have like a laundry list of, well, that was wrong and that was weird and why'd they do that? But I did not care about any of it because I was having so much fun.
Exactly. All the detractions I've seen, I don't care about. You know, this is a retread of the first two movies or whatever. Eh, you know what? This movie had one goal, and that was to revitalize everything, right? To get people back into Star Wars is not a bad movie, and in order to do that, they played on a lot of the things that people found great from the first three, the original trilogy, and if that's what it takes, they certainly did the job well. And I can't imagine now if they do so. JJ is not doing the next movie, so I have less fear that the next Star Wars movie is going to be like the second reboot Star Trek movie, which is going to be a lot of in-jokes and, hey, did you see this? You know, you remember that time when this happened?
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Yeah. I think they've set up a very good... They did a very good job of, this is what everyone liked about the original movies. Now that you're all back again, hey, let's go tell a new story and go this way. At least that's what I'm hoping for. I have no... a way of telling. I guess we'll find out in another 2 years. But, wow, if that's what they do, I'll be perfectly satisfied.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I think they had to establish the universe, get people back in, because so many people had the bad taste in their mouth after the prequels. And, you know, they had to reconvince some people. They had to get a new generation sold. I think they did a great job not bringing in any of the old characters until halfway through the movie, so that you had... you know, a nice, almost a full hour of getting to know Finn and Rey and Poe a little bit, and really investing, especially in Finn and Rey. I really like these characters. I feel like I know them now and I'm really rooting for them. And once you're on board, then it's like, oh, look, it's Han Solo. It's like, oh, cool, Han Solo. I'm excited to see these new characters interact with Han Solo. Whereas if they had started with, here's Han Solo and he's on the Millennium Falcon, and then we're going to bring in these new characters, we'd be like, okay, that's nice, but let's see what's Han Solo doing, you know?
And they did such a good job, I didn't care that there were no old characters, you know, in the beginning. They had old Stormtrooper-looking things that were familiar, and then they had new characters and a new X-Wing that looked kind of like the old X-Wings. And that was enough to tide me over and get to know all the new stuff, like you said. And when the old characters finally came, it wasn't like, hey, where have they been all this movie? You know, it's
right.
Like, okay, now our stories are starting to intersect and we're going to see how this goes.
Yeah. I was really excited that BB-8 didn't suck. I was afraid that they were pushing him so hard in all the trailers and the merchandise. That I was like, oh, he's so adorable. Please don't be lame. And he didn't. He was great. She was great. It was great. Whatever.
Yeah, definitely has the Disney influence of, you know. Yeah, exactly. But you know, that's I can't complain about that. What could you complain about? Since you know we're obviously on a talking on a podcast about a science fiction genre, so we're going to be nitpicky about things. So
absolutely, and there are things to be nitpicky about. You know. Starkiller Base is a new Death Star. You know, we've had long standing history of joking about, you know, the necessity of super weapons in Star Wars stories. It's a thing.
Well, I've got a shelf full of them. I mean, from dark sabers to sun crushers. I mean, that's a theme, you know.
And they try to, you know, hang a lampshade on it a little bit. It's like, oh, I wish it was another Death Star, but you know, look, it's big. And it's like, oh, so what? It's big. You know, there's got to be a way to blow it up. Honestly, like the the thing that bothers me the most is when they hyperspace into past the shields. That's like the science, the sci-fi nerd in me is like, oh God, that's not right. When they're like, oh, well, they've got fractional rotating shields, so anything moving slower than light speed can't get by. And so they light speed into the base to get past the shields. And I'm like, that flies in the face of every Star Wars physics thing that we've ever been told. It's the gravity well that pulls you out of hyperspace. And yeah, you know, I'm willing to let it go, but every time they jump in that for that like 2 seconds, I'm like internally cringing.
Well, having run a Star Wars game for, 10 years on end and making up physics and trying to imply things from the books and things like that, I can tell you that I did not have a problem with that. I didn't even care. It was like, all right, well, okay. When ships fall out of hyperspace, they're really not going that fast. So the whole pull up quickly thing didn't matter to me very much. Falling out of hyperspace right next to a planet, as you said, yeah. The way that it was described is fly too close to a star, bounce into a supernova.
Bounce too close. Yeah. Honestly, I would have been completely willing to let it all go, because they've written off the EU as legends. You know, none of that is canon, except they just had an episode of Rebels where they introduced the interdictor.
Yes, that's right. Where they pulled things out of hyperspace.
Which,
well, yeah,
makes that canon.
But
you know, for all of you know, of all the things to be upset about, that's pretty small.
What if he was flying through hyperspace? If he had not pulled out of hyperspace, in the atmosphere or on the other side of the shield, the planet would have pulled him out of hyperspace. Except he would have crashed into it, and it would have been bad for everyone. We don't know where that edge of the gravity well is. I mean, Legends has it that you can't jump into hyperspace until you've cleared the gravity well, which is well out of the atmosphere. But maybe you can, it's not going to pull you out of hyperspace until you get you get deep into the well. I don't know.
And we don't really know. I mean, like, that's another conjecture thing. Is it a planet? Is it a space station? Is it a space station that they cored out a planet to make? Or did they build a planet around a space station? I mean, we know it's planet-sized, but...
I got the feeling with trees and such on it that it was a planet, a small planet maybe, that they just gutted.
So, and then, maybe that fits futzed with the,
maybe it doesn't have mass of it,
and then that lowered the gravity well so that they could do that.
And then they put artificial gravity generators everywhere so that people would stand upright.
Well, you want to be able to feel confident when you line up your Nazi troops out there so you can have your big, propaganda moment.
If everyone raises their arms at once and starts floating off, that's not a photographic moment.
That's right.
All right. The thing that I cringed at, as you did, is the same thing that he did in the Star Trek movie, the first Star Trek movie, and that is being able to see another planet blowing up from your planet. The hyperspace laser that we can't even quantify, we don't even know what it is, right? Okay,
right.
Sure. It starts out, let's say it's as big as, a small continent, maybe. Let's say it's the hole that the blast comes out.
Okay, it's right. Like Australia.
I'd say it's smaller than
maybe
that.
India.
Okay, let's say it's India-sized. So we've got this India-sized diameter beam coming out of the planet. Flies across space. Eventually, it's going faster than light speed because it has to do it in 30 seconds instead of how many years it would take.
Right.
So.
Well, it's traveling through hyperspace.
Exactly.
Like Dustin Cops Boy.
Well, clearly it's doing several things. That might be one of them. This thing that is the size of India is flying across space, and I'm in a planet far away. Let's call it some distance away.
Millions of miles.
Let's imagine that the two closest planets in the galaxy that are in different star systems. Right? There's I'm going to see these beams of light going across the sky that are smaller than a small cot. Okay. It shouldn't have been visible. The laser beam shouldn't be visible. They shouldn't have been able to see that. If it was let's put it this way. All right. Even if it was wide enough for them to see it from wherever they are, the people on the planet who were turning around watching it did not melt. So it's not putting off enough light to go across the stars to wherever they were. They would have been puddles on the ground and nothing else for miles around. For it to be able to... And then there the explosions of the planets and the stuff, whatever they were in the same... They were these things in the same system. They blew up where the Senate had moved to. They moved the Senate around, apparently, in the New Republic. And it was on this planet. The planet blew up. The ships in orbit blew up. And they looked like they blew up a moon or something, too. Sure. Okay.
I think they blew up the whole system. It was all the everything, all the planets in the same system.
All the planets in the system. Looking up in the sky, several distinct explosions that were farther apart than any two stars would have been.
And they see them immediately.
Yes, immediately.
Not a week later or a year later.
Or hundreds of years later. All right.
Dude, it's a galaxy far, far away.
And really close together and full of things that make sound travel. Yes, I know. No, it's the same. It's the same problem I had with Star Trek, and to a degree, Into Darkness. Spock shouldn't have been able to see a planet get sucked the inside out because the planet was the size of a moon, and it was too close for that. Even if it was in the same, he should have had a telescope with a little monitor on it. Say, look, Spock, I hate you so much. Here's a telescope you can watch what's going on. Okay, that I could have taken. But even in Into Darkness, they're flying back and forth and beaming between planets and things. I don't think J.J. Abrams knows how big the universe is.
Well, I don't know if he knows how, like, solar systems work, because the thing that bothered me more than that was apparently you too was like, okay, the Star Killer is apparently a Star Killer because it feeds on stars like Galactus.
Tasty star plasma.
Star matter. It requires, it's fueled off of a star. Apparently it's already powered up when they decide to fire it. They fire it once, as we already discussed, and then they're like, okay, it's timed. Now we know it works, but like we thought it did, and the Resistance is going to find Skywalker, so let's shoot it again and blow up the Resistance that we've tried very hard to hide, but now apparently we know where it is. It's powered by the sun, as we've just discovered through exposition. Let's suck up this sun energy that's conveniently here. I don't know why we have another sun. Once this sun is out, then we know that it's powered up. I don't know where the other sun went that we powered it up from the first time, or how we're planning on powering it up again after destroying the Resistance without being able to move this planet. The only thing about that I actually liked was that as soon as they do consume all of the sun's energy, it immediately starts snowing because the atmosphere starts cooling, which I thought was
Wow, I didn't even make that connection. That's awesome.
I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt that was done because it would be cool and scientific rather than dramatically appropriate. But yeah, maybe they knew it was only going to be a two-shot thing and it was in a binary system.
I took that to mean they were just pulling off, you know, corona outside of the star. And after a while, the star lights up again and they could, you know, pull from it again. But they started. So we learned when they're in the briefing that they started charging the station, right? And then they went through this whole, okay, we're going to jump to hyperspace, and Han's going to go in and going to do the thing. All this time they're charging. Planets kind of spin.
Yes. Not this one, apparently.
No, this one always – well, okay. Later on, they showed it at a weird kind of angle going up to – so it wasn't straight up. But they charge a little bit and then, you know, wait for the next day. Charge a little bit more.
Oh, sure. And that would actually be cool.
How convenient is it that the the target that they shot at lined up with the planet exactly as it was rotating it around. Right?
Right.
How do they aim the thing?
Clearly,
I need to read the novelization because I'm sure it'll have all the answers to my questions, which I believe I have checked out from the library, and I'll be reading soon.
I've heard that it does have answers to a lot of questions, although I also heard that it raises more because they wrote it based on the shooting script, which is slightly different than the final script.
Sure, I can see that.
But
I'm just remembering back. I think it was Revenge of the Sith was a fantastic novelization. I read it before I saw the movie.
Oh, my God, yes.
It made me like the movie, which may or not have been what actually happened had I not read the book first. I'm hoping it's as good. This Alan D. Foster guy has been writing Star Wars books since before there were Star Wars books. So I'm looking forward to it. We're getting Rogue One next December. Is that right?
That's correct.
And then Episode 8, likely...
The following May.
The following May, although I've heard a couple people say that it'll probably be December since this one did so well, or is doing so well, which I don't hate, but I don't know.
Yeah. I mean... It is a nice time, you know, that a lot of people are off and seeing, you know, families. There's not really any blockbuster competition.
Well, I remember, it Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit and Harry Potter all came out in the wintertime, right? They were all November and December movies. So there's some precedence for having a movie that you know is going to come out repeatedly every year, just be that everyone else gets out of the way, whereas in the summer you have all the blockbusters come out.
Sure.
I really was hoping I like the May release because it's right around my birthday and it's party time and it's summertime and but you know, on the other hand, having it in the winter was kind of nice too. I don't know that I care.
I'm fine either way. I mean, I was just I enjoyed the shift to May because that meant we had to wait six less months.
Fair enough.
Until it comes out. I do like the holiday being, you know, I can go see it, you know, four times in a week and be on vacation.
Yeah. As far as other, I mean, we talked briefly at the tournament about, you know, wanting to look back and so have all these binders full of Star Wars cards. How much fun would it be to go back and play? And then I think Johnny said I don't know if it was Johnny or not. Someone said they went over to, went over to the players committee site and it was rough.
That desire was quashed immediately.
Yeah, it's too bad. But I mean, I want to go back and watch all the Rebels episodes that we haven't caught up on. I've been writing a new story for our on and again, off again Star Wars RPG that I'm ready to get back into.
It's definitely, you know, I've been looking at all the ancillary published material, looking at, you know, I've heard good things about the not Aftermath because I've heard very bad things about that. But there's one that's like a collection of short stories for each of the new characters, Finn,
nice.
Rey, and Poe. That's getting very good reviews. You know, I just want to see everything. I was very much like, okay, no toys, not going to worry about any of this stuff. And now I'm like, where are they? Bring them all. I really want Poe's X-Wing, orange and black X-Wing.
That's funny.
Are you kidding me?
You got a new one pretty quick.
Yeah. Well, I think that was his like undercover X-Wing because I don't think you want to take the one that gets blown up at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, because, you know, he knows he's going out on a secret mission and, like, you don't want to take your big flashy orange and black. I know this is a Resistance X-Wing.
All right.
But, and they mentioned that in the visual dictionary that apparently he has a multitude of ships because he is a pilotaholic.
All right. Is there anything else we need to chat about before we wrap this up? We've been going for a while and,
It's getting late. It's been a long show, but I know we've, been waiting to talk about this, so yeah. I'm glad we finally can. Maybe we'll talk about it more next time, too.
It's likely. We'll probably come back to it and reference it over and over again.
I love the crap out of it, and I'm just really excited. I know not everybody felt the same way, but I was really disappointed with the prequels, even though they ended on a higher note than the first two. It was really joyful for me to sit and be ecstatic every time, all seven times I've gone to see this. I just, you know, the first one was, I was high on adrenaline and excitement, and anticipation, but to really enjoy that first time, and I've loved it more each time, and just really be happy to get to see the, you know, not qualified joy, but really excited to see the movie every time I've seen it. It's just been really a relief to love something that I love again.
I'm looking forward to going to see it again. There's a saying, I think we brought it up before, when you go to Arby's and you have three tournaments and you have three meals there, you're living the dream. I didn't have three. I think I had two. And then yesterday, I was living the nightmare because it was just not good. Between the boy had a stomach flu and it passed on, and I probably ate too much, and it was just bad all over. So I was not feeling well. We didn't get to go out to see the movie. Perhaps next year, next weekend, we'll be able to go. I'll take the girl again. Maybe we can hit the 3D viewing. That would be nice.
Yeah.
But I'm looking forward, definitely going looking forward to go see it again.
If you go to AMC IMAX on Sunday, yeah, this week is the last of their four-part series. Each Sunday, they've been giving out posters, very cool art posters, Star of Force Awakens themed. The first one was Rey, the second one was Poe, the last week was Phasma. So I'm assuming this is the fourth and final one, that it will be something Finn or Kylo related. But they've been really cool posters. So if that's something you're interested in, either you or a viewer, listener, I recommend that. January 10th, any AMC on a Sunday IMAX viewing.
Cool. Oh, I wonder if they're going to have it on the boat.
Ooh, that would be cool. They have movie theaters on boats, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, maybe we'll take a break from the gaming. All right, very good. Okay, then let's wrap this up.
All right, well, let's wrap this up. I've already thought of more Star Wars questions I'm going to ask you, but they'll wait till next week. We'll have to get ready for our boat tournament, or maybe we'll have Tribbles or something, and then see some Star Wars. In the meantime, I am Sir Rogue.
And I'm Sir Dan.
And I will remind you all to expand your power in the universe.
And I will draw to end. You cannot run, you cannot hide, and you cannot defect. They are always watching you, but to